coercion was more common. We define it with a two-part test based on how coercive control works. We asked first, did your ex-husband ask, encourage, or pressure you to use or open this account? And if she said yes, we asked, what did you think might happen if you said no? And it was only if she provided a consequence, the threat that he had made or had implied, that we counted it as coerced debt. We also asked about manipulation. This first question for manipulation was the same as the one for coercion. And then the second question was, looking back on it, do you think he manipulated you into opening or using this account? For example, did he trick you, lie to you, or otherwise con you into doing it? And as you can see, not many people said yes to this. I suspect that it's an undercount for a variety of reasons.
I would agree that there's probably a likely large undercount there. The clients that I've met with where I do initial consultations with are either embarrassed or don't necessarily know that they've been manipulated. I remember meeting with an engineer who was pretty young, who had taken out quite a lot of debt for a bar. And when I started asking questions about, you work full-time as an engineer, when do you have time to run this bar? She's like, oh, it's my boyfriend's bar. Your boyfriend's bar, so your boyfriend's on the debt with you? Oh no, it's all in my name. The SBA loans, the credit cards, all only in my name. So do you help run the bar? Do you have any interest in it? And you could see her kind of realizing that she had been manipulated and used, and now her credit was ruined while her boyfriend's credit was just fine. So I think it takes a little bit of time for some of the debtors to realize what's happened to them.
A classic manipulation technique that we see is the abusive partner says, oh, my credit is bad, so we need to use your credit for this, right? And then her credit ends up getting ruined too. So if you look at just fraudulent and coerced accounts, 20% of them were coerced. This number is lower than if you add up the total number of fraudulent transactions and coercive transactions, because on a credit card, you can have both, right? You could have transactions where the abuser took out them out without her knowing, and then transactions where he coerced her into taking them out. When you add manipulated debt into the mix, it only adds one more percentage point for the number of accounts. All right, so next I'm going to talk about the types of accounts that were on participants' credit reports. And these were the accounts that were useful for our study. So for example, we excluded accounts that were closed before she started dating her ex-husband because her ex-husband could not have coerced or fraudulently done anything with those accounts. What's interesting, once we put this all together, is that more than half of the accounts were credit cards, right, just by themselves. Like 50.3% of the accounts were credit cards. In a distant second place were vehicle loans and student loans, with about 11 to 12% of the accounts. And then a third tier rounded out with mortgages, personal loans, and unpaid medical bills at 5 to 7%. And then after that, there was no type of account that was more than 3% and or had more than 100 observations. So I'm going to focus on these six types. So here's the first thing we learned, is that this is the percentage of each type of account that had coerced or manipulated debt. And coerced debt, again, includes fraud. So credit cards were a little over 20%. The most was personal loans at more than 30%. And then the least were medical bills at around 7%.
When you calculated the credit card debt, did you include authorized user debt?
We did. So because on the credit reports, we can find out whether she was an authorized user on his account, but we can't find out whether he is an authorized user on her accounts. So if it's an individual account, we don't know whether he's an authorized user or not.
Makes sense.
Yeah. No, thank you. That was a really good question. All right, so credit cards. This is one of the few where the fraud numbers came anywhere close to the coercion numbers. And again, these percentages add up to more than 100% because the same credit card can have fraudulent and coercive transactions.
So I'm here to kind of provide real stories that I remember from cases that I've done. And I remember a debtor who made quite a bit of money, about $200,000 on an annual basis. He came to see me. He was behind on his mortgage, and his car was about to be repossessed. And it took me quite a while to figure out what was happening with the money on a monthly basis. And in this case, the spouse was using the children to manipulate him into living a lifestyle that they couldn't afford. Every month, they were spending all of the income, plus charging up huge amounts in credit card debt. And bankruptcy was actually a tool that was really able to help because it stopped the credit cards from being able to be used. They were closed. And then it put that debtor on a wage order, so the money was being taken out of his paycheck before it got to the household and was used to pay the house and the vehicle, which they needed. So it's kind of like a helpful way if they can't stand up to their spouse to be like, well, this is a bankruptcy court's making me do it. There's nothing I can do about it. I have to do this.
That's great. I hadn't thought about that use of chapter 13. That's very clever.